Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Wildfires aren't going to surprise anyone, especially first responders in this coming summer of drought. The question is what they can do about it. State and federal leaders are now saying that their resources will be tested by significantly increased fire risk. In average years, Colorado sees 6,000 to 7,000 wildfires. Most are small. They're handled quickly. We never hear about them here. An average year would be an absolute blessing because 100% of the state is currently in some level of drought, and there have been double the number of red flag warning days this year than last, most year to date in the last two decades. Colorado's federal partners and agencies like the Forest Service insist they are ready to pitch in if needed. They say their firefighting staffing lines up with previous years, despite massive federal job cuts under the Trump administration.
Service is poised to have the same response that we've had in years past at the national level, clear down to the local entity. So we have the same resources that we had last year.
It's an interagency system that will be stretched thin, no doubt about it, and we just have to rely on the true partnerships and the collaboration that take place from that local fire department all the way up to our through the state and our federal partners.
Bigger concern this year is how Colorado will recover if a wildfire grows out of control and causes real destruction. Because the Trump administration, while vowing retaliation against Colorado for election issues, has denied the state's most recent requests for disaster funding, including for wildfires. Talking with meteorologist Chris Bianchi a minute ago. And Chris, I asked you a really dumb question, but I'm going to ask it again here because I think people might find it interesting. How is 100% of the state in drought when portions of the state, like up in the high country, are covered by snow right now?
I think it's a perfectly fair question. It's one that a lot of you have. It is the water deficit. So in the mountains, we picked up about 35 to 45% of the typical water that we see in a typical winter. So we saw less than half of it. So what you're seeing here are A, the water deficit, and B, projections out onto the spring in terms of the gap of water that we are going to have once this snow melts off in the coming weeks. Parts of northwest Colorado under the highest level of drought, which is an exceptional drought. But now, for the first time since late December of 2021, 100% of the state of Colorado is underneath some form of drought conditions. And the other thing about this, 100% of the state's in drought, right? But it's not just we're talking about a moderate drought across a good chunk of the state. 90% of the state is in severe or worse drought. And about 18% of the state, I was just showing you, the northwestern part of the state is in the highest level of drought. And unfortunately, even with the rain that we're seeing today in southeast Colorado, these numbers are probably going to grow in the coming weeks and months. More details, though, on that short-term forecast, some of that beneficial rain we've got right now that's coming up in a few minutes.
Farmers in Colorado are considering unheard-of water conservation measures this year. Our Mark Salinger explains the new strategy for planting season.
I guess we overuse that word unprecedented, but it really is critical.
It's hard to farm without water.
I've always said that probably the most important characteristic of a farmer is that they need to have a bad memory.
Robert Cicada says that's made this year difficult.
I can never remember a time like this, and I'm sure if my dad was here, he probably would have said the same thing.
Robert's family has farmed this land in Brighton for two generations. This year, he's been forced to make decisions that he's never had to make.
And so we're probably going to cut back our planted acres by probably over a third. And that's like instantly taking a pay cut, right? Because we've removed our earning potential.
Without the water, there's risk in planting anything more.
We want to really minimize what we could lose. So if I'm by not planting a third, all that investment that could be $1,500 an acre that I'm putting in throughout the year, if I don't have enough water to finish it, I'm going to lose that $1,500 per acre.
Robert knows this better than most. Along with farming 2,000 acres, he's also the state's first ag water policy advisor at the Colorado Department of Agriculture.
Even though it's cloudy today and we may get some rain, it's not enough to really say that we'll have irrigation water in August, right? That's not going to help at all.
The water Robert gets to his farm comes straight from the South Platte River. Colorado's historically low snowpack this year will impact everyone.
It's across the whole state of Colorado, people making those tough decisions. Because every year there seems like there's a unique challenge. But that's also what makes it exciting, is that each year it's something different. We're trying to overcome something.
Like water, farming is critical.
You know, the other characteristic of a farmer is that we are eternal optimists.
Here's to hoping next year is easier.
Robert's work with the state helps influence how Colorado handles water rules and regulations specifically related to farming. He says change is hard, but change is necessary, especially in this drought. He says everyone needs to find new ways to work together to preserve water and make the most of what we do have, Kyle.
It's going to be hard on people, like on a personal level, too.
Yeah, Robert wanted to make sure that we mentioned that mental health is so important in all of this, with the stress that some farmers are dealing with the water and the economy, whatever it might be, with tariffs, that there is help out there, and there are specific resources directly for farmers with behavioral and mental health as well.
Yep. We'll mention, among others, Agwell, which Word of Thanks donors helped to rescue last year from federal budget cuts.
Good
stuff.
Yeah.
Mental health care for farmers and ranchers. Mark, thank you. If you have an O or a zero on your Colorado license plate, you could be SOL or S0L, because when police mix those up or put in both versions just to be safe, then you could get flagged by flock surveillance cameras over and over again. Our Spencer Soischer explains how even grandmas are now getting caught up in Colorado's massive surveillance system.
I continually am getting pulled over.
We thought Kyle Dossman had a unique story.
Everywhere in the state, every time I pass a camera, they get alerts in their car that I'm in the area.
Gilpin County wrongly issued a warrant for his license plate, and another with an O where his has a zero. Flock cameras alerted Cherry Hills police, who pulled them over. The police chief there thought it was a one-off.
No.
76-year-old grandma Sarah Judson saw Kyle's story and knows it wasn't.
Me too. Happened to me too.
Sarah passed these flock cameras on McCaslin Boulevard on the way to see her grandkids in Superior when she got pulled over.
And I stuck my head out of the window and went, hello. And so I think about that time he realized I wasn't the ringleader of some stolen plate deal.
She says a Boulder County deputy stopped her a second time, told her she was driving a car with stolen plates out of Colorado Springs, and they too were alerted by flock cams.
They were looking for my car. It's ludicrous.
Her problem, the same as Kyle's. Colorado Springs police entered two plates into the hot list used by flock, one with an O and another with a zero. And both Kyle and Sarah couldn't figure out how to get off of the hot list.
I was like, holy smokes, this is my story.
Katie Rothman saw Kyle's story too. The Jeffco Sheriff's Office stopped her after a flock cam alert for stolen plates. Turns out Aurora PD meant to enter a plate with an I and put in Katie's plate with a 1 instead.
We have a lot of data that shows that police interactions, depending on the person and their identity, can go very different ways.
The ACLU says there's real concern that without better guardrails, interactions like Kyle's, Sarah's, and Katie's may not always end this way.
We know that in a different situation, on a different day, in a different jurisdiction, it could turn into much more than just an inconvenience.
So we got Kyle's issue fixed last week after our story aired, and we let him know. But both Sarah and Katie said they had no idea if they were still on this list that had them getting pulled over. Aurora says Katie's has been off their list. Katie's been off their list since she called to let them know after the fact. And Colorado Springs Police told me this afternoon it was removing Sarah's plate from the list, and they were calling her to apologize.
I feel like the most efficient way to fix this statewide, Spencer, is for you to just make this your job and continue to correct it on a one-off basis. Somebody is asking out there right now, shouting at their television, why don't they just fix the license plates so we don't have to play this game where the cameras can't tell the difference between the O's and zeros?
So I asked them both that today, and the similar answers of, why is that my problem? Why should I have to go to the DMV? Why should I have to pay for a new plate? Also, how easy is it going to be if maybe there's a warrant attached to my plate? It's been reported stolen. It's more so for people who maybe lost their plate or something happened to it, not for people who ended up in a system they weren't supposed to be in the first place. Also, they need to have a slash through the zero at this point.
Something. I don't know, because I don't know. I'm not sure how much time you're going to be able to dedicate this, but go check your email and go help some more people. Spencer Soischer, thank you. A partial government shutdown dragged on for more than 2 months, but today, suddenly, it's over. The House voted abruptly today to fund most of the Department of Homeland Security, but not its immigration enforcement operations. DHS hasn't been funded since February 14th. Democrats refused to fully fund the agency unless Republicans agreed to negotiate new restrictions on federal immigration operations. But House Republicans refused to pass a partial funding deal. President Donald Trump tapped into some temporary funding to pay workers like TSA agents after worker shortages caused major delays at airports. But Trump urged House Republicans to agree to a new funding deal this week as that funding was set to run out. House Republicans gave up their opposition today, voting to send a partial funding deal to the president's desk. They say they'll work to fund immigration enforcement operations through the budget reconciliation process instead. Republican leaders say they will use that separate function to provide about $70 billion for immigration enforcement and deportations for the remainder of President Trump's term. The House Speaker, Mike Johnson, says that funding will not be attached to any quote-unquote crazy Democrat reforms. I need to offer a correction and an apology tonight about our reporting Wednesday on the Evergreen School shooting report. Due to our own internal miscommunication at 9 News, our reporting inaccurately described how we got those records. 9 News did not file a record request, as we stated, nor did we have to pay for the records, as we stated. Every other television station in Denver filed records requests, and the sheriff's office then proactively notified 9 News of the pending release of the documents. The Jeffco Sheriff's Office has had no intention to withhold those documents from the public. We should additionally note, those documents were released to the media for a nominal processing fee after they were first given to the families of the school shooting victims. I apologize to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office and to the Evergreen community for our errors. SNAP recipients in Colorado are one step closer to being able to buy hot rotisserie chicken with their food stamps. It's a bigger deal than you might think. Right now, SNAP only covers cold or unprepared food items. This is a decades-old rule originally meant to encourage home cooking. Some stores literally cool down their rotisserie chickens, not their people's feet, but rotisserie chickens. They cool down those chickens to sell them to SNAP recipients. There's pictures of chickens. Glad we found that video from 1984. The bill at the U.S. Capitol adds hot rotisserie chicken to the definition of food. Previously, it didn't qualify. The measure cleared the House today as part of a broader farm bill. There's bipartisan approval from Colorado's congressional delegation, and the idea now heads to the Senate, where Democratic Senator Michael Bennett is co-sponsoring similar legislation. That's that same shot from 1984 of the hot rotisserie chicken.
That got me.
Here's the deal, Chris. We're doing our best around here, but sometimes our best is not good enough. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes our best is not good enough. Speaking of people's best not being good enough, what was up with all that rain that we got today, or didn't?
Yeah. Let's get into that here, Kyle. So where's the rain, right? A lot of us have been asking that. Now, I will say, just to be transparent about it, we've been talking the last few days that we are on the northern fringe of the storm. The storm tracked a little further south and a little weaker. So the Denver area mostly missing out on the rain. I will say, if you're watching me from Douglas and Elbert counties, you've seen quite a bit of moisture, up to about a half inch of rain so far today in Castle Rock and Franktown in the southern edge of the metro area. But again, southeast Colorado getting the rain. Here in the Denver area, we are on the northern fringe of it. That storm tracking just a little bit further south, and the results, well, womp womp for the Denver area. That center of low pressure, it's over the northern Gulf of California, way down there. And so it's a little tough for us to tap into that here in the metro area, though we are seeing a little bit of snow up in the mountains right now. That'll continue over the next few hours. That will end from north to south overnight tonight. And then that 7-day forecast, it dries out, warms up this weekend. I will say, looking promising that early to mid next week, we should get some more chances for rain back in the picture.
Once again, people in Weld County say they've been blindsided by photo radar tickets on a busy road. This time, it's 20 miles south of Kersey, where we've been talking about this issue. It's down in the town of Hudson. The town put up a new camera on Weld County Road 49, then took it down 3 weeks later. It was in a spot right near a 55-mile-per-hour sign, where it quickly drops to 40 miles per hour. The $40 tickets just started coming in the mail, and they're confusing drivers. Colorado law requires towns to post a notice that cameras are coming. They have to put it up on their website 30 days before the cameras go live. It says that only warnings are supposed to be issued for the 30 days that the camera has been placed. Hudson's police chief has not answered our questions about whether they followed the rules on that. A bill at the state capitol right now would tighten the law.
Improves transparency and predictability, requiring clear signage, public notice, and warning periods before it begins.
The bill at the state legislature would require a town or a city to physically post signs in the area, not just online, signs in the area, warning drivers that an automated speed camera is coming. That idea passed a Senate committee unanimously this week.
My name's on there and I'm going to see you!
Senior signing day isn't just for athletes. An entire senior class got to announce their next step in life today. That's next. High school graduations are right around the corner. First, though, a tradition that we never tire of, the continued streak of Denver School of Science and Technology seniors all headed off to college or post-secondary ed. Our Byron Reed has that.
Things got a little loud at the Denver Coliseum this morning because today's event marked a major milestone.
I've worked very hard these past 4 years making sure I'm having my grades right.
For DSST high school seniors Fajir Ahmed and AJ Horton,
it's very heartfelt.
It's a time to celebrate their achievements.
Excitement, nervousness, I'm just really excited to be here.
I'm actually valedictorian of my school, so I really pushed myself, challenged myself to do the best that I could just to add more significance to this day.
They're here for Senior Signing Day that brings together 900 seniors from DSST's campuses across the metro area to declare their plans for the future. They're celebrating something special this year. 100% of its senior class has been accepted into college or post-secondary program for the 18th year in a row.
100% college acceptance doesn't happen by accident. It's a lot of work, and ultimately it's the drive and the passion of our students and our community.
Dr. Lizette Martinez is the Vice President of Academic Programming for DSST, who says it's part of their goal to close a gap.
Our mission is to dismantle educational inequity by transforming the educational experience. So that means that it includes enabling students to be able to break down those barriers, and we also need students to do their part.
From first-generation college-bound seniors to future leaders, Signing Day is more than just a ceremony.
Definitely nerve-wracking, but I'm very excited and proud to step into this new chapter of my life.
I did think it would get here, but I thought it was going to take longer than it did. Everything kind of flew by this year.
So even if the decibels were slightly louder than normal,
I'm going to DU!
The day is giving these seniors something to cheer about.
I'm signing to Colorado School of Mines.
I'm going to CSU Fort Collins.
For next, I'm Byron Reed.
If you were asking me my favorite Colorado traditions, that probably makes my top 10. It's just so joyful. We are back with your feedback next. Oh, at least I got a hat out of it. Feedback via text tonight. Thanks for mentioning the mental stress of farmers on the Eastern Plains. Things move slow. Stress builds. Stress is slow to let go. Thank you for your support, the texter says. Veronica writes in about the license plate mix-up situation with flock cameras. When you see the zero and the O together, it's obvious to humans that they're different. Yes, Veronica, I have no doubt that they are different to humans, but we're being watched by machines. That's what's going on here. Chris on Thread says, Kyle, you are a treasure. Please never change. Well, good news, Chris. I'm incapable of meaningful change. Roll that beautiful bird footage.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.